warriors come out to play. Warriors come out to play.
A gang from Coney Island has to fight their way from the Bronx to Brooklyn after being framed for a murder. This week, we talk about ice cream gang parties, gang logo design, and the logistics of gang fights in bathrooms. Basically, we talk about gangs a lot. As the Warriors celebrates its 40th anniversary, we find out if the movie stands the test of time.
Time, James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hi, I'm James Brief, and this is the Test of Time podcast. Joining me, as always, is...
me! It's me, Alan Noah. Hello, James. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. You're looking well. You've been working out?
I have been. I know you noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, you can really tell. You got some real definition in your earlobes. What? That's a good thing. I wish I had your earlobes. So today we're going to talk about The Warriors, a movie that is turning 40 years old. But before we get into that, I wanted to bring up something that was inspired by a guest we had on the show a couple weeks back, our friend Mike Kahn. He was on our PCU episode, and he was asking us after we recorded, he's like, so what other podcasts do you listen to? I thought maybe we could share some recommendations. Do you listen to a lot of other podcasts, James?
There's a couple I listen to. Hardcore History with Dan Carlin. I like that. It's basically about real like history that you just don't really know the details of. Like if I were to just say like Genghis Khan, you'd be like, yeah, I mean, he conquered most of the world, I think. And that's about 90% of what I know about him. This thing just tells you about, you know, what happened. It's really cool. It's a lot more interesting than what I'm saying because it's called Hardcore History for the stuff that we don't really always talk about. I've also listened to a podcast called How Did This Get Made?
Yes, that is a very good one. Yeah.
It is good. Basically, it's about bad films. They would do films like Geely and those kind of films. They will just rip on something like that. What about you? What do you listen to?
Well, there are a lot of people that we know in real life who have podcasts. On our Coming to America episode, we had my friend Amita Patel, her and her co-host Sean David Johnson, I know from VH1. They have a podcast called Inside Pop, which I always listen to. It's all about pop culture, movies, TV, and you know, things like that that I really enjoy.
Then we have our friend Darren, who has his podcast, Board Games Are for Losers.
Yeah, some other guys I know from my days in television. Josh Zepps is a guy I worked with a couple years back, or more than a couple. He has a podcast called We the People Live, which I really like. John Gabris, a guy I know from VH1. He has a podcast called High and Mighty. Actually, he's on a couple podcasts. He has Action Boys and Raised by TV. Those are really good shows. He's a really, really funny guy. There are the podcasts we've just kind of discovered on Twitter. There's the Wayward Willis. We had John on when we did our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode. There's Large Marge Sent Us, a show I really enjoy. They were on our Willow episode. There's the Only Podcast About Movies, which are just guys who talk about movies in a very smart, thoughtful way. I really like their show. And then there's a lot of other random shows that I've found over the years. There's a show called Go Informed that has a lot of information about Disney World and Universal Orlando, which when we went to Universal, there were a lot of good tricks and tips I got from that show. So shout out to that podcast. Serial, everyone listened to season one. The new season, season three, was phenomenal. Like, highly, highly recommend.
I didn't see Serial, so we're going to have to correct that. Not everyone saw Serial.
Well, no one saw it. It was a podcast you listened to.
Not everyone listened to it.
Most everyone listened to Serial.
Okay, we apologize for the error.
I listened to Slow Burn. There are two seasons of that about the Nixon Watergate scandal and then the Clinton impeachment, which was just riveting stuff. Like kind of like you're saying about history, like things you don't know about. Like I didn't know anything about Watergate. I don't remember very much from Whitewater and Lewinsky and all that. And it's just, it's told from like the point of view of these characters who you might not know, even if you did know a lot about the stories. Really, really interesting. Radiolab does really cool stuff. I just discovered a podcast the other day called Everything's Coming Up Simpsons. They dissect one episode of The Simpsons at a time. And the episode I was listening to had Billy West, who's, you know, a god in the world of voiceover talent. You know, he's Philip J. Fry and Zoidberg and Ren and Stimpy and Doug.
But then they can only have about 350 episodes. They can only go on for about like 7 years or so.
I mean, they'll never stop The Simpsons. I think they're in good shape. do you remember when we were talking about Nexium, that Allison Mack from Smallville was in like that weird sex cult where they were branding women? I listened to a great podcast called Uncover, which is about this woman who escaped that cult, which is fascinating stuff. And then politically, I like Pod Save America, and they did a spinoff called The Wilderness, which is all about the Democratic Party, a real warts and all look at the party, which I thought was really interesting. And there's just a ton of great podcasts out there, man. I listen to them pretty much every day when I'm driving to and from work. And if you've got other podcasts that you really like, tweet at us at Test of Time Pod. Let us know. I'm always looking for more recommendations, other shows to check out. You know, actually, Kevin Smokler, who we had on the show, he's got a list, an email list, Say Yes Once, about podcasts that he likes, which is a really good list. I found some good shows on there. Yeah. But enough about that. Let us talk now about The Warriors. This is a cult classic that I am going to lose a lot of cred and I'm going to get yelled at by some people when I admit this. I had never seen this movie.
Me neither. It's one of those films that I'd always heard about. And there was a video game about the film, so I had heard about it. But I'd never seen it. I always wanted to see it.
I just happened to see that it was the movie's 40th anniversary. And I was like, hey, you know what? Why don't we just watch it now? So why don't you tell us a little bit about this movie for anyone who hasn't seen the movie?
Yeah, The Warriors, this film takes place in the near future. Well, near future according to 1979 when the film was released. And in this dystopian future, gang members outnumber police officers in New York City 5-1. And a gang leader named Cyrus attempts to unite all of the gangs together, but he's assassinated. The Warriors, a gang from Coney Island, is blamed for the killing and is chased across the city. They run from rivals, escape from the police, and battle other gangs in an effort to get back to their home turf.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward plot.
The film was a pretty straightforward hit, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It opened on February 9th, 1979. It had somewhere between a $4 and $7 million budget, and it opened at number one with $3.5 million on its way to $22 million. It presumably sold well on VHS and DVD and television rights. But really, to get into this film, we do have to talk about, and we've kind of hinted at this in some of the films in the 80s that we've reviewed, like Adventures in Babysitting and RoboCop. Like, urban in the early 80s, late 70s meant crime-ridden. You can't say that a lot of these things are over-exaggerated because in New York City in the late 70s, the subway cars legitimately were spray painted and like there were roving gangs on there. You may have heard of the Guardian Angels. These are basically vigilantes that just rose because the cops just couldn't do anything against the crime that was going on. So that's the opening of this movie. It basically starts where you see these gang members and it's cutting between a lot of stuff, but you hear that there's some kind of truce that's been going on.
And so all of the gangs are going to this summit, basically, in the Bronx. And you see all of these different gangs getting together and it's sort of intercut with Cleon, who's the leader of the Warriors, and he's sort of explaining what's going on. And every gang is supposed to send 9 members of their gang up there to this summit. No weapons allowed. And some of the guys are like, who is this guy and why are we going? And I don't like going without weapons. And they're just kind of all expressing their feelings about it. They say that Cyrus is the president of the biggest gang in the city. And I was just like, gangs have presidents? I would not think that they would have that title.
I think they do. I mean, really? I wouldn't necessarily think they all call themselves president, but I'll bet you some of them do.
I mean, like leader, boss, kingpin. I just don't feel like the word president.
You think some of the bosses are called kingpin?
I think that's more likely than I'm the president of like the 8th Avenue Stabbers or something.
Well, I will say that in this film, we surely find out that there are like hundreds of gangs and they are very differently dressed and they act very different. It's basically a huge costume party. So there probably is a gang of like people dressed up as like presidents and stuff.
For sure. I mean, let's talk about what some of these gangs look like. The first one that kind of like made me do a double take was a gang of mimes. They are dressed like Marcel Marceau in like the classic black and white striped shirt and their faces painted white. And I mean, mimes are creepy and mimes are a little bit scary, but as a gang, I don't know that I would be like intimidated by a gang of mimes.
Right. I mean, they put very little thought into this makeup. You could have made him look like devil-like, but no, you laughed out loud. Some of the other guys I liked, they were basically guys dressed in like hot purple.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of like hot colors that people were in. And they would all have like matching, I guess that you could call them like Michael Jackson Beat It gangs, like those kind of jackets.
And the Warriors themselves are wearing these like sleeveless vests. And that's like the only like shirt that they're wearing is just this vest that it says like the Warriors on the back. Like some of these outfits, it almost kind of looks like on The Simpsons, like the Pin Pals, like they have like the logo designed on the back.
Right. Like there's like the people dressed on camo, the people dressed in wife beaters, the people that just have like matching outfits that are so weird. And they're all coming together to the Bronx.
Right. And we see everyone taking the subway. And this is a subway that is like completely covered in graffiti because this is 1979. The people are using subway tokens, which is a completely test of time thing. I mean, when we were little kids, there were tokens. I feel like I remember when the machines had the MetroCard swipe thing and the token. And then, you know, they phased out all the tokens. Also, a lot of these gang members are not putting the tokens in the machine because they just hop over the turnstile because they're gang members. But we're seeing everyone come together. At one point, one of the Warriors, this guy Ajax, says that the reason he wants to go is so that he can meet some strange wool, which I interpreted to mean meet women. One of the other guys is like, whatever you say. And he's like, what's the matter? Are you a F word? Like, okay, so that's this character. We'll remember that about you, Ajax. But then we get to this giant convention in the Bronx. And basically what Cyrus is saying is that the gang members vastly outnumber the police. And instead of just, you know, fighting over a couple of square feet of turf, we should just take over the city. We should organize. We should be united. And then as he's rallying the troops, he just keeps saying, can you dig it? And that's sort of like his catchphrase. And, you know, it's funny because this guy is like clearly a bad guy who wants to make the biggest gang of criminals in the world. But you kind of like him because he's just kind of charming.
I mean, he definitely has one of those ideas of let's stop being violent, roving thugs. And in the middle of his speech, not really the middle of his speech, basically the end of his speech when he's got everyone behind him and they're all real excited. We get this glimpse of a guy that had been staring at him down the barrel of a gun. And we find out that this guy is basically an assassin. And just as Cyrus is saying, can you dig it? He dug his own grave.
Well, he doesn't dig his own grave. He gets shot by someone else, and then he can't dig it because he's dead.
Can you dig your own grave?
Yeah, and so then nobody really sees who fired the gun except for one of the warriors. And the guy who shot Cyrus knows that he's been identified, so then he points at Cleon, the warrior's leader, and is like, that's who shot Cyrus, the warriors did it. Everyone hear me, the warriors did it. So, you know, now everyone believes that the warriors did it. Cleon like starts fighting off a couple of guys, and then he's just like swarmed by this whole sea of dudes. And that's the last we see of him. I have to say, I kind of was expecting him to show up later in the movie just because of that rule where if you don't see him die and it's only heavily implied that he dies, maybe he survived. But for all intents and purposes, I think we are meant to assume that Cleon is killed by these other gang members. And then while that's happening, the police show up. Somehow they've gotten wind of this gang summit and they start arresting people, and everyone just kind of scatters out into the night.
So the warriors are kind of gathering together, but they haven't been able to find everyone. They realize that Cleon is missing, and they say, like, no matter what happens, we're going to meet up at Union Square, which is 14th Street, right in the middle of town.
But they say, we'll meet at the platform at Union Square. And right. I'm like, that station has multiple platforms because multiple lines converge there. And then later on, when they do ultimately get to the Union Square station, you know, it takes them some time to find each other. It's like, they should have been a little more specific because that's a really big station.
Right. You could easily just say, let's meet on the Uptown 6 platform at Union Square. Even then, you might have a little trouble, but you probably find it then.
Right. It would be easier.
Right. Have you ever played a game on the Genesis, Sega Genesis, Mega Drive called Streets of Rage?
No, I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
It's like Double Dragon, one of these things where you're just walking around and basically these gangs just come out of everywhere and you just have to beat them up and then keep walking. This film really could have been called Streets of Rage, the movie. Like, it's exactly what this is, because the main driving part of the rest of the film is that they feel that they're not going to be safe until they can get back to their home turf on Coney Island.
They have to travel through three boroughs. They have no weapons, and every other gang in the world is looking for them, although they don't realize that at first. So they're trying to figure out who's in charge now that Cleon is gone, and they sort of all agree that it should be this one guy, Swan, but then Ajax, who is the rough around the edges guy, he's a hothead. He's not so sure about Swan being in charge, but he kind of goes along with it. And then the other gangs are sort of called to action to hunt down the warriors by this radio DJ who's basically speaking in code about, hey, all you boppers out there, we're looking for the warriors and this song is for them. And then she plays Nowhere to Run, you know, nowhere to run, baby, nowhere to hide. So it's a pretty clear message. I couldn't help but think that it's a weird way to communicate with all the gangs in Manhattan. You do see that some of these gangs have like the boombox on the shoulder. But like, if you don't have the boombox on your shoulder and you're just a gang walking down the street, how are you hearing that radio broadcast?
You know, there's hints in this film that there's a very, very technical network and surveillance system that these gangs have. Like, we have reports that the warriors are here. Our other report person here said this. And it seems like they did use this radio station that they kind of controlled, or maybe it was one of those pirate radio stations that's just randomly playing on 88.5 or something. And maybe they used that to send out some of their, like, there's going to be an ice cream pizza party on this neighborhood, which means go there and kill people. I wouldn't be surprised if people use stuff like that.
I would think that when they say that, they mean there literally is an ice cream and pizza party only for gang members. You know, just we're not going to be gangs for a little while. We're just going to have some ice cream. We got Rocky Road. So the warriors' first run-in with another gang is when they're trying to get to the subway. and they see these skinheads riding by on a bus. And they're just kind of like hanging out in the shadows. And then all of a sudden the subway comes and they decide that they have to make a break for it. And at first it looks like they're pretty close to like the entrance to the subway. But then when they start running for the subway, it seems like they are really far away. And they're just like sprinting down the street, trying to outrun a bus, which, you know, is a vehicle with an engine. And it just seemed like this was a really, really dumb move because they have to run all this way and then get to the subway entrance, then get onto the subway. And then as it happens, as it works out, they get on the subway just in time. The doors close and the subway takes off. And the skinheads are like, oh man, we just missed them. But you live in the city. You've taken the subway countless times. You know that a lot of times you can run to the subway and get on and the doors will stay open and they'll just say, oh, we've got some signal problems. It's going to be a couple minutes. And then what? You know, like then these guys would have just been completely stuck.
Oh, there's absolutely room for some comedy where the doors could slam. They go, ha, 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 you guys suck. You missed us. And then just a New York thing, the doors bing and they open again. And it's like, we are being held momentarily at this station. And they all get their asses kicked. But of course, that doesn't happen. And they are able to escape.
Right. And they're on the subway for a while, and then there's a track fire, and it seems to be implied that someone lit that fire to get these guys off of the train.
Right.
But then they don't ever really pay that off. But while they're wandering around this neighborhood in either the Bronx or Upper Manhattan, they bump into these guys called the Orphans. And they never heard of the Orphans, but these guys think that they're really tough. And one of them, to show the Warriors just how tough they are, he takes out from his pocket a newspaper clipping of like bad things that the Orphans have done, which is so hilarious. One, it's just kind of a test of time thing to have a newspaper clipping, but also to present that as a like proof of our gang is so tough. Here, look at this newspaper article I have. I highlighted some sections for you to show really bad things we did. It's pretty funny.
Right. And the Orphans, they wound up chatting with the Warriors. At first, a little aggressive, but then they're like, no, these guys are okay. And they give the Warriors the best piece of advice they get the entire film. Because this is not modern day. Nobody has a cell phone. Nobody knows what these people look like. There is one subtle thing that does identify each person as a member of the Warriors on the night that they're being chased through the city for being members of the Warriors.
Right. And that is if you look very, very, very carefully.
Very carefully. You had to rent the HD version of this film.
Right. Or if you just don't look carefully and just happen to ever so slightly look in their general direction.
Or if you have, what are these called, eyes?
Right. You will see that on the back of their sleeveless vests, it says in big letters, the Warriors. And so you're right. The Orphan says, take off your Warriors shirts, and then you can pass through our neighborhood as civilians, and then we won't have any gang problems. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, what these guys should do is take off their vests and just walk around. And maybe it looks a little weird to see eight dudes walking around shirtless, but better that than the neon sign pointing, we are the gang that everyone is looking for.
Yeah, they could just be the 33rd Street, you know,
torsos.
Yeah, the torsos. What are you guys looking for? We's looking for the Warriors. What are you guys looking for? But they're being
33rd Street torsos. I don't know why I think that's so funny. I'm laughing at my own joke. I'm sorry. But right, so the Warriors refuse to do that. That's against their code to take off their jacket.
We'll never take it off.
Right. And then this woman shows up. Her name is Mercy, and she's, I guess, a friend of the Orphans, but she's sort of like instigating trouble, and she's kind of like, you can't let these guys walk by. They'll walk all over you. She's basically just stirring up shit just kind of for no reason. And then the Orphans are like, we are so offended that you won't take off your shirts. This means trouble. And then they just walk away. I was like, wait, what just happened? And the warriors keep going. Mercy comes back out of the blue and she's been following them. And because these guys are gang members, they basically threaten to gang rape her. And they're like, oh, you seem like the kind of girl who'd enjoy it. And it's awful. It's creepy. It's terrible. Then the orphans do show back up. Apparently, when they left before, they were just going to get weapons. And now it looks like, okay, finally, maybe we're going to get to see like a real big gang brawl. But one of the warriors throws a Molotov cocktail. There's a car explosion and they run again.
Right. They all escape.
So, like you said, James, there's this network of information going around about these gangs, and the Riffs, who are the big gang that Cyrus was the president of, they heard about what happened with the orphans. And the new leader of the Riffs says, the orphans, they're not in our network, which just made me laugh because all I could think of is like medical insurance. Like, oh, those gang members, they're not in our network. They're out of pocket, which is obviously not what they meant, but kind of made me laugh.
Right. So now they're going to have a chase through the subway station by the cops. And they are not friends with the cops. They kick the cops down the stairs and they're running through them. One guy has a fight with a cop and he's thrown in front of a subway car and presumably killed. Well, he's killed.
Now, I was reading about that. So apparently that character, his name is Fox. And basically the actor who is playing that guy got into like this fight with the director and they hated each other. And basically he just threatened to quit the movie and was like, I'm done. I'm out of here. And the person who the cop throws in front of the train isn't really even that actor. It's just a guy who kind of looks like him. And the actor who plays Fox like insisted that he didn't want to have any credit for that movie. Thomas Waits is his name, and he's not credited in this movie as a gang member. And from the point of the story, it's fine that this guy is killed by a cop and gets thrown in front of a train. I mean, it's a brutal, graphic death, but okay, fine. He assaulted a police officer. That could happen. But what bothered me about it is that none of the other warriors see it happen. So they're all just going on without ever wondering, hey, whatever happened to Fox? No one says, oh yeah, he got killed. He got run over by a train. And just later on when they're all meeting up, no one stops to say, hey, we should wait for Fox. Like they don't know that he's dead. Like someone should have seen it or someone should have told them just so that they knew and wouldn't have to be like a plot hole. It's basically a plot hole for no reason.
You're absolutely right. And you could have just filmed a reaction shot from one of the guys going like, no,
exactly,
not that guy, not Fox.
Yeah, how easy would that be to do?
Man, the pigs got him. You're right. Because his death means nothing because it doesn't motivate them to be like, we're really getting killed.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been like a plot point regardless of the fact that the actor wasn't happy. But it's a plot hole for no reason.
Well, they get through this. And, you know, we mentioned the mime gang, but there is another gang that has face paint. And they're what I basically would call the New York Yankees ghost face gang, because these guys are basically wearing New York Yankees pinstripe uniforms.
Right. It says on the back, the Furies. I paused it to read it because I couldn't make it out at first, which also begs the question with a lot of these gangs, like, where are these guys getting these uniforms? Is there like a whole thriving business of like uniform makers? Or like they design your logo and you like have to, you know, maybe go through a couple rounds of revisions. Like, this is a little too Yankees for us. I mean, can we have a little different? We don't want to get sued. But I mean, you don't want to piss off the Yankees. But yeah, so basically these guys have baseball bats as weapons because – of course, right? And they are chasing them through the park. And eventually the guys are like, I can't run anymore. We have to fight. And I feel like this is the first real like fight scene in the movie. Oh, there's a little bit of that skirmish in the that opening summit meeting. But this is finally the warriors fight back.
Right. And this is where I realized, oh, so this is how fight scenes go in this film. They're outnumbered by these other guys or equally matched. But these New York Yankee guys, the Furies, they have baseball bats. And a baseball bat is absolutely a deadly weapon. But not only do the Warriors disarm 100% of the baseball bats, but they beat the crap out of this entire gang, and not a single one of them get their head smashed open.
These guys must be really, really bad at baseball and also holding things and, like, you know, fighting and swinging anything. If these guys were a real baseball team, they would strike out all the time because they just wouldn't know how to hold a bat to swing it at a ball.
Like, right. They were horrible.
Just really, really bad.
Yeah, they wind up beating up these guys. They are walking more through the park, which I assume is probably Central Park, because at this point they're in Manhattan.
Or maybe Riverside Park?
Yeah, maybe. And although, should they be that far west? It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
And they see this beautiful woman. She's sitting on a park bench. And most of them are like, come on, we don't have time for this. And Ajax, he's the hothead from earlier. He's like, I'm going to go say hi to this lady, you know. And it's like, ugh, we're not waiting for you, man.
Did you happen to notice who that actress was? Did she look familiar at all?
No, she didn't know.
She is Mercedes Rule, who we have seen in two Test of Time movies. I think just the two. She was the mom in Big, Mrs. Baskin. She was also the mom in Last Action Hero, the kid who, like, goes into the movie.
Austin O'Brien.
Yeah, his mom in the movie is Mercedes Rule. And she's been in, like, a ton of other things. But Ajax, he's the one who had called the other guys the F word before because he wants to get laid. And he says that even now. He's like, oh, I'm going to go back to that girl. And they're like, we have to go. And he's like, what are you, an F word? Like, okay, right, we get it. You're really macho. He goes over to this woman. They start making out. She seems to be okay with that. And then he just starts, like, assaulting her. And she says, no, no, you can't do that. She slaps on handcuffs. She's an undercover cop. The cops show up and, you know, arrest this guy.
Actually, she spins around, handcuffs him, starts blowing her whistle. And it takes, like, 20 seconds for these guys to come. I always assumed when there was a single cop, you know, as the, like, bait to get the guy, that the cops are, like, in the bushes practically there to help her. But she was totally screwed if she wasn't able to do the swing move and handcuff him because he attacked her.
You know, a couple of the Warriors see this happen and they're like, well, what can we do? He's under arrest. Also, you kind of get the sense that they didn't really like Ajax that much anyway. So, fine, whatever. He's out of the story. That's the last we see of him. Swan and Mercy are still being pursued by the cops. I don't know if I said before that Mercy found them again. And they jump onto the subway, like, tracks and just kind of escape the cops that way, which it seems really easy for them to just walk along the tracks and not get hit by a train. I would guess that it's not that easy in real life. I'm never going to test that theory.
I mean, I feel like I'm just guessing here, but it's kind of realistic that in 79, there was just no regulation of this stuff. You could jump down on the tracks. And, like, my guess is that there's not, like, 6 inches between the train and the concrete tunnel. My guess is there is a decent amount of area that you can avoid the trains. I don't know for sure, but that's my guess.
Fair enough. They're talking back and forth and he's calling her a whore and she says, how dare you? And what I do in my life is fine with what I choose to do. And she's not apologetic about who she is. And Swan's kind of turned on and they start making out. And then he decides, no, no, I can't do this because this is literally the worst night of my life and you're part of it. So I'm gone. And then some of the other Warriors get down to Union Square Station and they meet these beautiful ladies who are winking at them. And they're like, oh, hello, ladies. And they go off with them, even though they're supposed to be waiting inside Union Square Station for the rest of the gang.
Mm-hmm. They go off with these women and they wind up going to basically like a big apartment party.
Right. And they're all having a good time. The ladies start making out with a couple of them. And then one of them sort of realizes that something's up. And that's when the girls decide to reveal that they are a gang of all girls who are totally going to kill these guys, why they decided to make out with him on the couch for 10 minutes first. I don't know. Maybe they wanted to, although it is also sort of implied that these women are all lesbians, so I don't really know what their game plan was. One thing's for sure, these women are terrible shots because, like, they have guns and they are unable to hit any of these three guys. Oh, no, that's not true. They do manage to cut one of them, right?
One gets a flesh wound. And, I mean, they unload 30 shots at these guys inside a New York City apartment. And nothing happens. I mean, even the guy with the flesh wound, it's more like he escapes. And then afterwards, they're like, ow, my arm. It's really lame. Once again, 100% of them get away. And Swan makes it to Union Square. And he's spotted by, like, this gang scout that's on roller skates.
Yeah, because you know it's intimidating. A gang member on roller skates.
Right. They all wind up reconnecting, and then they all run into the men's room where they are pursued by a gang.
Right. And so I guess their thought was that if they go into the men's room and hide in the stalls, that when the guys approach the stalls, they can pounce out and get the jump on them. I guess it makes a little bit of sense, but I don't know. Would you be better off just like fighting in the open platform and having a little bit more room to maneuver?
It only works if the guys looking for them do exactly what they did, which is that they each are standing in front of a different stall. And then one of them decides to open the first one, seizes them, and all the guys jump out and jump out onto other gang members. Had they all been waiting 10 feet behind the stalls with guns, the fact that they all jumped out of the stalls and went, ha, with their hands, they would have just all been gunned down immediately. It was a little silly. But once again, they win 100% victory and beat up all the other guys.
I guess it's a kind of a cool fight scene. Did you notice that, like, while the roller skate dude was, like, following Swan, that in this subway station there were arcade machines or like a pinball machine and stuff?
Well, I did notice that there were arcade machines, but the thing that was weird was that they were like in the middle of the floor. They were not against a wall in like a corner. They were just in the middle of the hallway. It was weird.
It is weird. I can't imagine anyone wanting to hang around a subway station to play video games. Seems like a dirty, scary place to do it. But they finally make their way back to Coney Island. And what we haven't really talked about is that the man who really assassinated Cyrus is this guy called Luther. And his gang, the Rogues, are also on the hunt for the Warriors because they know that they can identify that they are the real people who killed Cyrus. So it's definitely in their best interest to make sure the Warriors are dead. And they're hearing these things on the radio that the Warriors keep on escaping. So when the Warriors finally get to Coney Island, the Rogues also track them down. And Luther has this very memorable line where he is in his car and he's clinking these beer bottles on his fingers and he's saying, "Warriors, come out and play." And that's sort of, you know, the famous line from this movie. When we had Don Monfrey on the show talking about The Crow, one of the bad guys in that movie is the same actor. And when The Crow is saying goodbye to him after he like kills him, he sort of does that sort of movement with his fingers, like the beer bottles. So little reference to the Warriors there in that movie. But basically, they run off to the beach. The Warriors grab whatever weapons they can. They run off to the beach, and that's where they have the confrontation between the Rogues and the Warriors. And Luther just says that he killed Cyrus basically for no reason. He just likes to do that sort of thing. It kind of reminded me of Heath Ledger's Joker, which is just about like doing evil things just for the sake of causing chaos.
Anarchy.
Anarchy, exactly.
Yeah, so Luther is about to kill the Warriors. Now, Luther has a gun pointed at one of the Warriors' head, and he has his finger on the trigger. But this Warrior, he does an interesting move. He's able to pull a knife out from the back of his pants and throw it at Luther, holding the gun, and the knife sticks in his forearm, and Luther basically drops the gun. This is all before Luther is able to fire the gun.
It's supposed to happen very quick, but I actually rewound that. I was like, wait, what just happened? How did he throw that dagger that quickly? Also, just good thing that he's better at throwing daggers into forearms than Luther is at shooting guns at point blank range. Yeah, so then the Riffs are there. Apparently they overheard Luther admit that he killed Cyrus just for fun. And the leader of the Riffs is like, warriors, you guys are good. And Swan's like, we're the best. And the Riffs is like, hey, sorry about all that. Well, we're going to go and kill these guys now. Goodbye. And I kind of had to laugh a little bit at like this apology of like, sorry about that. Sorry we killed your leader. Sorry we've been chasing you through three boroughs all night. You know, one of your guys is dead. One of your guys got arrested. Well, that's not really the Riff's fault. He was a rapist, so fuck that guy. But I mean, like, they've had an awful, horrible night. And you're just like, hey, our bad. See ya.
My B warriors. I'm sorry. Yeah. My bad.
You guys are really cool, though. Love you. See you around. Bye-bye.
OMFG. I'm so embarrassed.
Oh, boy. I stepped in it this time.
You.
Why I oughta. And then that's it. The warriors and Marcy go off into the sunset. The City by Joe Walsh starts playing, and that's the end of the movie. I will say, I didn't realize that that was a Joe Walsh song first. I always knew it as an Eagles song. The Eagles re-recorded it, Joe Walsh, of course, being one of the members of the Eagles. But I'm telling you that like you didn't know.
I thought he was the guy from America's Most Wanted. John Walsh?
John Walsh, yeah. Wrong Walsh.
All right, Al, what do you think about The Warriors does and does not stand the test of time?
Well, I mean, look, it's a cult classic that is still beloved and talked about and referenced and definitely still has a following all these years later. So it definitely resonated with people. I think that the movie was sort of iconic in its depiction of gangs and, you know, what the inner cities really look like, quote unquote, really look like at that time. And, you know, gangs are still a thing. Gangs still exist in 2019, 40 years later, and gangs still scare people. But what doesn't stand the test of time is that the gangs of today, MS-13 and groups like that, I'm not an expert, but I don't think they all get dressed up looking like mimes. I'm pretty sure that they don't all get dressed up looking like the Yankees. I'm pretty sure that the Bloods and the Crips do not all wear matching sleeveless vests. I mean, the way the gangs are presented in this movie is fairly cartoonish and like comical from a 40 years later point of view. It kind of makes me think a little bit of West Side Story, which is, of course, a beloved classic and everyone loves it. But like that story to me always felt a little bit weird of like, okay, you've got these two really tough gangs and they hate each other and they kill each other and they sing and dance all the time. Like, is that what gangs really do? Of course, it's a musical and that's like, you know, the thing. But like, I just can't imagine walking down the streets of Manhattan and seeing a gang of mimes. Like, that's just so goddamn ridiculous. It just doesn't work in 2019. It just doesn't. I think the fear of gangs is still around, but it's just, it's not this kind of gang.
Imagine if the president was like, we need a wall to keep out the Hilltop Hightowers, and we need to keep those Saskatchewan Scabaroos.
Well, then we need a wall on the northern border to keep right. out the Saskatchewan Scabadoos.
No, the Saskatchewan from the Upper West Side of New York.
Oh, yeah. right. You need a lot of walls throughout all five boroughs, basically.
Right.
But it'll be fine. Mexico will pay for all of them. I also feel like the fights in this movie are a little few and far between. You just have so much of the warriors just running and not doing actual fighting. And, you know, the fights, like you kind of mentioned, that, you know, when they get into a fight, they all somehow always manage to escape totally unscathed, except for the one guy who gets thrown on the train tracks, RIP. I enjoyed watching this movie. I'm very glad that I've seen this movie, but I don't think it really stands the test of time. It's just too silly by today's standards in their depiction of the gangs. What do you think, James?
Well, you know, it's interesting. This film was a pretty big hit, so it really did resonate with people. And my guess is that it didn't resonate with senior citizens.
Probably not.
My guess is that this was a hit with the couple of the youths that were in the audience. You know, I think this is one of those movies that probably younger people said, this is something like for us, like this is how we speak. And it was definitely a financial hit. Something you were saying, you just can't take it seriously. I did find there is a listing of all of the gangs that are listed in the script. And there's a lot of great New York references. The Amsterdam All-Stars, the 8th Street Bombers, also the 5th Street Bombers, the Gramercy Riffs, aka the Riff Raffs, the Hi-Hats, the Stonebreakers, the Xylophones.
What?
I mean,
the Xylophones?
There's the Napoleons, the Five Points, the Electric Eliminators.
Oh my God.
These are great. The fight scenes are really annoying to me because I thought it was great in the beginning. I'm like, there's like 10 of these guys. They're going to be getting picked off one at a time, like standard horror movie stuff. No, they don't get picked off. Except one guy gets arrested and one guy blurringly gets thrown in front of a train. They should have lost one guy and gotten really pissed off every time. No, Ajax! I can see how this film, it's the concept's kind of cool, but it's just, it goes from one fight to another. And there's no consequences to any of these fights because they all seem to survive every one of them, pretty much. I'm glad I saw it. It's not a terrible film. The beginning's actually really cool. I thought the first like 7 minutes when they're going on the train and you're meeting the gangs and it kind of a cool editing thing. I'm like, this is going to be a neat film. It just kind of got a little lame. You know, it's an important film in the history of film, but it's not something you need to watch today. So, you know, when we say two thumbs down, this is not like last week when we said Weekend at Bernie's is two thumbs down and basically do not ever watch this film. The Warriors, you want to watch this film, you might like it.
Totally agree.
Different strokes for different folks. You might like this one.
Yeah, it's still a movie that's worth seeing. I'm glad that I've seen this movie. One other random thought, it just kind of occurred to me a couple weeks back when we were talking about Varsity Blues and the Scott Conn character who is like bragging about rape and everyone is just kind of like, oh, you.
And tweeter.
Tweeter. And he's still like a lovable scamp. At least in this movie, which came out 20 years prior to Varsity Blues, the rapist is a bad guy and everyone hates him and he gets arrested and he gets his comeuppance and good.
So, right, and he tried to assault a cop, so he's probably going away for a long time.
All right, we are in agreement that The Warriors does not stand the test of time. We still like it, though. Don't at us. But we are going to be coming back next week for a very special Valentine's Day episode. Episodes usually drop on Friday. We're going to release next week on Thursday for Valentine's Day. Our special guest on our Valentine's Day episode is going to be Courtney Noah, a.k.a. my wife. Courtney's going to come on the show to talk about one of her favorite rom-coms, My Best Friend's Wedding. So you don't want to miss that one. Make sure you don't. Make sure you subscribe. Whatever podcast provider you're listening to us on, hit subscribe, write us a review, and talk to us at Test of Time Pod. What do you think of The Warriors? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you have gangs of mimes in your neighborhood so you think we're totally off base here? Let us know. We want to hear from you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.